Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Swing and a drive to left field. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Two-run homer, Wilson Contreras. Cubs lead 3-2.
The veteran reliever ready in the 2-2 pitch. A swing and a fly ball towards center. Mariznick is there. He's got it. And the Cubs win the ball game. Kimbrel gets the save. A routine fly ball to center. Jake Mariznick makes the catch. And the Cubs win it by a score of 3-2 here in Milwaukee.
Low target, 3-2. Lamb in the air. Right field. Naylor back at the wall. He makes the catch. In June, it's a tie ball game. In the chill of April, the Indians win 2-0 in 10 in a brilliant game.
No, it's not discouraging at all. I mean, we played, what, how many games now? 10, 11, right? Yeah, there's a lot of season left. I think that, you know, we got to get some guys healthy. I can't discredit our offense or our defense. Defense was fantastic tonight. Offense, I mean, they're trying. It was just against a really, really good pitcher. We gave it our best shot, kept it close. In the extra innings didn't go our way there. But I think that, you know, the loss tonight, not too much to worry about. We just get back on it tomorrow and try and win a ball game.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our thanks to the fine folks at WSCR for the Cubs highlights. They're great people. And, of course, NBC Sports Chicago on the Sox highlights. Plus, you heard Lucas Giolito there post-game, and that's good to hear. And, David, interesting talking to Ozzie and getting his take on the bullpen, and he said that in his notes he wondered why some guys are going two innings plus. That would seemingly prevent the use of them from day to day, and now you've got kind of specialists for a couple of innings, and then you wait, and then specialists for a couple innings, that sort of thing. And I'm just curious, when you heard that, did it resonate with you?
Well, I also thought it was interesting. Ozzie wants to make Ruby the bench coach, which is a creative idea. I think I understand, though, why they have to be cautious with these guys. I don't necessarily agree with Ozzie totally. I think that when you're talking about Michael Kopech and certainly Garrett Crochet, these are two of your most prized assets in your organization. Cody Hoyer as well. All these guys who are good enough to make you feel like going into this season, you had the best bullpen in baseball. Why did you believe that? Why did you hear that? Because of the depth, the talent that existed with your third and fourth option down in the bullpen. So I don't want Michael Kopech on consecutive days. I don't really think I'd like to see Garrett Crochet on consecutive days. I know that is maybe conventional way of using these guys, but I don't think there's anything conventional about the White Sox bullpen in that they're structured so they rely upon Kopech and Crochet in the sort of these bonus roles. These are guys who you don't know when they're going to be called upon or in what situation, and part of that I think involves understanding and accepting that they're not going to be able to use them as frequently as your typical reliever. So I personally am okay with the cautious approach to that. I don't have any problem with it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a cautious approach. I think that, honestly, I think that with Kopech, they're using him for an extended role because they probably eyeball the idea of having him in the rotation before the year is out. So you want to go two innings plus, and you want to get him more than just one inning spurts, because you probably expect to use him differently than the other guys. I don't understand. Maybe with Hoyer, it's something to do with his effectiveness, and you don't trust everyone in the bullpen. It just seems like Tony La Russa is still learning his bullpen. And as far as not knowing when they're coming in, I think we know that Crochet is going to have to pitch the 10th inning if a guy is on second base, because the guy has to be on second base.
So wait, you don't think that the way that they use Kopech has anything to do with being cautious because of his arm situation, health, and wanting to preserve him?
Well, they're using him for 2+ innings, so they can't use him day to day. But I think it's more about keeping him, for an extended period of time than just one, three guys at a time. So I think it's different with him, and I don't fault that. But why do it with Hoyer that way? That's what I don't get. Why have two guys that you use to a point where you can't use them the next day? I think these guys are used to coming in these short spurts, right?
Well, but that's kind of Hoyer's role, isn't it? I mean, because you look at down the road, you have Hendricks for the 9th, you've got Bummer in the 8th, you've got Marshall kind of in between there, and you've got then it gets into the Hoyer, Foster, then the Crochet and Kopech. You have a lot of different options and a lot of different ways to utilize these guys. That's why when we're talking here in mid-April, I don't have as big of a problem with saying, okay, if I see two innings of lights out pitching from Michael Kopech, who is doing things with his rising fastball we haven't seen him do before. Goodness sakes, he's got a live arm. Take your time getting back on the mound, because he's sort of like reliever with an asterisk. He's sort of starter in waiting. And however you want to structure that to make that possible, I think you want to err on the side of caution.
Okay. I don't have a problem with that. And like I said, I think it's different with him than with other players. But I don't know. I haven't seen this mastery of the bullpen that I was expecting. And maybe it's because I've seen the bullpen not be masterful.
That's
maybe
it.
Maybe it's as simple as that. It. But whatever it is, it's kind of upsetting.
Of course. You're not supposed to blow leads.
Yeah,
you're supposed to protect them.
I know. And I hate seeing the same guy make a similar error, the same type of blunder that costs you two different games. I'm sorry. I don't like that. And, we have texters that are saying, hey, the White Sox have just as much. Why don't they go up and score runs? When your opponent is the first one that gets to go to overtime first, so to speak, in college football, that puts pressure on you. You have to score a touchdown now. They didn't settle for the field goal. Oh, they got two runs. It didn't surprise me they lost that game as a result of that. I was glad to see Jake Lamb get behind the ball. I was kind of hoping that it would go out, frankly. But, hey, this is baseball, and unfortunately, we haven't seen the – I agree with Ozzie. We haven't seen the White Sox hitting as well as we imagined they would. They're not – in this Cubs futility portion of the program quite yet, but they are not banging the hell out of the ball, and they're not scoring tons of runs. And, when they have been patient and gotten a lot of walks, we haven't seen the big hit to drive in a lot of runs. That's been frustrating.
You're right. They're 16th in the league in hitting. They're better than that. They're better than mediocre. They're better than middle of the pack. They have offense galore. Even without Aloy, you would think they'd have enough offense to be better than they have been. So Ozzie makes a good point. Molly, the Crochet thing was frustrating because of what happened, but it almost overshadowed the fact that there was that catcher's interference call, which was strange. And again, that would have what Crochet's mistake did was it led to a base being lost, but that was still something that with the Grandal catcher interference call was something that we didn't pay as much attention to because of Crochet doing what he did before. And it was just a bad inning and a bad sequence of events there that led to the winning run being scored.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and criticize everything they're trying to get done. And I understand it's early, and I agree with what Ozzie said. It's going to take Tony La Russa a certain amount of time to get to know his bullpen, to get to know the team that he has. And maybe he changes his mind. I think part of the problem is that we have an idea of who some of these players are, and they're not being employed in the fashion in which we anticipated, such as Andrew Vaughn. You know, you go through this entire offseason where you're like, oh, no, we don't need the DH. We don't need to get anyone else. We got Andrew Vaughn. Oh, Andrew Vaughn is ready to go. And then, you know, a week before the season, you're trying to figure out, oh, no, how do we replace the Lloyd? You know what? Andrew Vaughn is so good. Let's put him in left field, and we'll teach him a position in a week. And, oh, he's ahead of the game and all that. Then you don't see the guy. So when you are struggling to score runs, you're wondering, well, you know, why am I Googling who this guy is? Or, you know, I have a vague recollection of Jake Lamb from his time in Arizona, and certainly from batting third a year ago. He got hot when he was first signed by Oakland. Did that mean that you tapped into something? Is he? And again, he hasn't played in a while, so I don't want to get all over him. It's just, you just want them to be doing better. That's all.
Yeah.
It was a big game yesterday. You had a pitcher's duel, and you wanted that to finish in a different fashion. That's all.
Made the last out, the silence of the Lamb. I mean, you could have really used a big hit there.
Well, he got behind it. He sent the guy to the warning track.
Yeah, I know, but that's the warning track power. Look, I have a problem with that more than I do anything else in terms of, you know, if Andrew Vaughn is as good of a defender as Tony La Russa, you know, professed, then you don't have the questions that I think of putting him in the lineup. Maybe you didn't want him to face Shane Bieber. Maybe you're protecting the kid's confidence. Okay, but I don't understand any excuse or explanation for why you went down 2-0 and Zach Collins didn't get in at bat. That doesn't make any sense to me when in the 10th inning, you know, Nick Williams is up there. And then we did see Lamb at the final at bat. But Zach Collins, who is dangerous from the left side of the plate, why wasn't he given a chance to do something? And or Vaughn at some point in time in a pitcher's duel, give him some, if he's there for his offense, let him try to get a hit. So, yeah, when you lose 2-0 in a pitcher's duel that lived up to the hype, you're going to have some things to nitpick, and that's fair game. That is part of living in a baseball city. But it was an entertaining game, but you just didn't like the ending.
Yeah, listen, it was a great game. It was a great, I mean, it was, you know, as I said to you, it was a Burley type game, a quick game. It was really moving. I think did they start an hour behind the Cubs, and it seemed like they were catching, they were ahead of them at one point. You know, they were moving along pretty good there. Both pitchers really doing a good job, and you knew they would, and you knew it was going to come down to who could get the big hit at the right time. And unfortunately, it came down to who, you know, couldn't field the ball at the right time. And I was miffed by that. And, you know, I know you didn't appreciate Bruce saying that he'd rather see a draw, he'd rather see a tie than watch this man on second to open extra innings. You know, I watch a lot of soccer, David, so I'm used to draws, I'm used to ties. That's not the worst thing in the world. You watch a lot of hockey, there are definitely some ties, and I think is anathema as it may be to think of that in baseball. Personally, I would prefer a couple of draws to a couple of 10th inning losses like I've had to watch over the last week.
Yeah, I guess in hockey you get a point, so I get it. But I still don't think you decide. I love watching the shootout because of the way that it accentuates and it emphasizes some of the individual skill, but I don't really like the reality of that deciding a game that was as hard fought as some of these hockey games are. So I get it, and I just like giving Bruce a little bit of guff. And we're going to talk about it. We'll debate it on Saturday morning. It's fun to kind of say, you know, he wants a tie. Come on, do you really want the standings to include another category? So I don't know. I just, the ties in baseball would seem a little bit odd. I think if you, in the 10th inning, give both teams a chance to win the game, and then in the 11th inning, if you want to gimmick it up and go put a guy in second base, knock yourself out, Rob Manfred. But I think that at least give teams one more inning to win the old-fashioned way, the way that they should be given and allowed to a chance to win.
And to clarify my position, it's not that I want ties or draws. I just don't want losses for the White Sox. That's all it is. If I can avoid a loss, I'll take a draw. But I am not advocating for draws or for ties or for any kind of non fan participation type of elements. I don't like that. I really want them to have a winner, and I want my team to be the winner. That's all I'm saying. All right, we've got Kevin Goldstein of Fangraphs. He's written a very interesting story about Javi Baez and his issues, and we're going to talk to Kevin next. It's Mully and Haun.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The pitch to Pena, bouncing ball to short. Diving stop by Baez, what a play. Shovels to second, they get one. Fantastic play by Javier Baez. That ball was ticketed for center field. He dove, stretched out, somehow gloved it cleanly, and then shoveled the ball when he was flat on his stomach. What a play. And he got it to Sogard for the out. You get really spoiled when you see a guy like Baez because he makes so many great plays. You should never take those for granted.
No.
Those are exceptional.
No. That play made up the middle today. I just don't know how many big league infielders make that play from where he started to get an out.
One away, ninth inning. Cubs lead by a run. Baez takes strike three, called a slow curveball from Perdomo.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. El Mago with another magician's trick in the outfield. Shortstop yesterday, amazing play. Diving, stops the ball, and then flips it out of his glove to second and gets a force out. Just an incredible play, but that is not the issue. And the issue is his success at the plate, and we are delighted to welcome in Kevin Goldstein of Fangraphs, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Kevin.
I'm doing good, gentlemen. How are you?
You know, we were talking about Javi yesterday, and I found myself kind of defending him even at the plate because I felt – I know he had struck out a lot at that point. I think it was just 17 at that point, which was five more than anyone else on the team. But comparatively, he was at least doing more than the other guys. At least he'd found a way to golf out a home run here or there. They've just been awful at the plate. But then I read your column and I read your breakdown of how he has played and what we're looking at here. And I got to tell you, I just don't know what the future holds. I don't want to see that glove move. I don't want to see Baez leave. But at the same time, it's really it's difficult to look at his status along with these other guys and figure out who stays and who goes.
Yeah, I think it's a real struggle for Jed Hoyer. These guys got off to slow starts, and I think their slow 2020 seasons also gave the Cubs a little pause as far as extensions go. And the problem with Baez is, I mean, look, we all know he's never had a good approach. This has never been a patient hitter. This has always been a guy who swings a lot of pitches. And it was something he could always make up for because of obviously an incredible amount of talent. But the problem is this poor approach has reached a historically bad level. It's not just bad anymore. It's among the worst we've ever seen in baseball. You know, he used to be a guy who would walk maybe 5% of his at-bats and strike out 25, 28%. Those aren't good numbers, but everything else he did made him a very valuable player. And, you know, over the last 2 years, starting in 2020, his walk rate is down 50% and his strikeout rate is up 50%. You combine those two things and you're entering the kind of numbers we've really never seen before in baseball. And it's not just the approach this year. And that's what's really concerning me right now. You know, yes, he swings at everything. Yes, you see the bad chases at breaking balls. But the real problem right now for Baez is that he's not making contact when he swings at good pitches either. You know, he used to be a guy when he swung inside the strike zone, he would be above that kind of baseline 80% mark. 80% is kind of the Mendoza line for in-zone contact. And right now this season, he's at 56%. And it's just not a rate you can survive at in baseball at this point. And I think there's a lot of reasons to be concerned here.
And you also point out, Kevin, in a great story of the 51 four-seam fastballs that he's faced. He's had a 71.4% whiff rate, which is nearly double that of the previous 2 years, and that was going into last night, of course. And I just wonder, as you look at all of the data and how overwhelming the evidence is it just obvious that he's pressing that these questions, and we introduce them every time and talk about, well, is Javi staying or is he going to be going? Do you think that internally this has taken a toll and has changed or altered his approach and success with it?
It's hard to say. You know, I'm not a fan of playing psychoanalysis with players, and you know, we don't know these guys. We don't know what's going on between the ears. If you watch him right now, it sometimes feels like, you know, we see all the chasing of breaking balls, that he's very conscious of the breaking balls and people trying to get him to chase, that he's not ready to gear up for velocity. And that becomes a problem. And, you know, the good news is, obviously, as we saw last night, he's not taking these struggles to the field, certainly, which we see a lot of players do. And so you do wonder what's going on. But when you see him at the plate, it just feels like there's absolutely zero plan. He's just up there in C-ball, hit-ball mode, which is a nearly impossible way to go in baseball unless you're some sort of extreme contact guy like Tony Gwynn.
You know what? It's amazing to hear David Ross talk about him, because he's talked about their hitting struggles this year, and he said things like, we have to be more selfish. We have to be able to go after, be ourselves up there, be aggressive. And he pointed out specifically that Baez is a different type of hitter, and you got to let him, you know, be himself. And if you got the birds, you got to let the birds fly. It's almost like you're saying, and I made that last part up, but it's almost as if you're saying, yeah, you know, get in swing mode. Go ahead. See if you can hit one. See if you can kind of fall into one. We're not going to try to teach plate discipline because it's not working, so we're just going to let him swing away.
I mean, it's hard to teach a guy like Javi Baez to draw walks. What you need him to do is be making more contact in the zone, like we talked about, but just trying to select pitches he can drive. And Baez can drive a lot. He's a bad ball hitter at times. And, you know, this guy in the past, like, he'd make up for all of these approach issues because he had plate coverage, because he could hit mistakes. And the fact that he's not doing that right now is where the real concern comes from. And I'm fine with Javi Baez being Javi Baez. It's just what Javi Baez is doing is kind of falling apart here.
You know, obviously he was asked about the Lindor contract a week or so ago, and everyone has focused on that and understands what that represents to the Mets. But when you look at the pending free agents, the Trevor Stories, Corey Seager's, Correa, do you still consider Javi Baez on that tier, or what tier do you place him on now, given the way that, you know, he has regressed offensively for whatever reason, and given what you know, what you have sort of unearthed here in this story?
I mean, I don't think he's in that tier with Seager and Story and Correa. I just don't think he's anywhere close to that right now. And I think, you know, if this kind of thing continues, I think the best thing he's going to be looking for is kind of one of those one-year make good contracts to recreate the value that he used to have. Because if this season continues to go the way it has, no one's going to be giving him some sort of nine-figure long-term deal. He's going to be looking, and he'll be smart to look for a one-year deal where hopefully he can figure some things out, return to kind of the 4 or 5 win player he was in 2017-18. And then he'll still be young. He'll still, you know, be under 30 heading into free agency off a good year and be able to make the money he was probably hoping for.
I think it's so frustrating with him, because I think we saw him a couple of years ago in a battle with Christian Yelich for the MVP. And since then, it's almost as if he's expanded his strike zone. And he's, you know, he's always been kind of a free swinging man of the traveling people, but this is now getting to a point where I don't know if there's anything that's thrown up there that he wouldn't swing at.
I mean, you're talking about 18 strikeouts and one walk this year,
yeah,
and which is just a remarkable ratio. And you know, only three players ever, including Tim Anderson in his rookie year, have ever had like a 10-to-1 ratio in a full year. And you're talking about right now he's at 18-to-1. You know, yes, he's hit 3 home runs, which kind of saves his stat line right now. But other than that, you know, you're talking about a .256 on base percentage, and there's just no way you can talk about him as one of the elite shortstops. And, you know, I think it's important, obviously, to note we're only 11 games into the season. He can turn things around, but based on what we saw throughout 2020, and it's hard to give a ton to 2020. Obviously, we had a pandemic. Baez himself was very vocal about his dissatisfaction with not having the in-game video to refer to, which was very important to him. He has in-game video now. It's 2021, and we've just seen no change.
Talking with Kevin Goldstein from Fangraphs, who had a great story on Javi Baez. Kevin, from afar, then when you look at this Cubs team, and I think we're so used to looking at the core, and what happened? Because did they not adjust to the way the league was pitching them, to the trends around baseball in terms of how to get people out? They have similar swings that were very good and productive in 2016 to 2018, the golden age of Cub baseball, if you will. But now you look at the same guys who once produced of being the reason there are chronic issues with this offense. Can you simplify it to one or two things?
I don't think it's something that's necessarily, you know, some sort of organizational or systemic failure. I mean, they are last in the league in batting average, on base, and slugging. That's a miserable place to be. I think we've seen good signs from Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant looked pretty good at the plate overall. I think, you know, even though Anthony Rizzo's hitting 162, I think there's a lot of bad luck built into there. I think he's been better than that. And some of these guys are going to bounce back. You know, we saw the big home run from Contreras last night. There are still very good players on this team. You know, Ian Happ's not going to hit 156 all year. You know, and I think this offense will be better than it is, and they're in a National League Central that is filled with pretty good teams. No one's above that pretty good mark, and I think it's going to be a wide-open division. And if they get hot, they can put themselves in it.
Can they – I mean, is there anything you can do? We've talked about this, about trying to mix up the lineup, about trying to move people in different spots, just anything. They haven't hit at all. I mean, they had one of the worst stretches of hitting that we've seen in Cubs history to open this season. Is there anything that can be done to sort of manufacture more hits for them?
I don't know how you manufacture more hits other than getting more hits. So maybe they can, right, you know, just tell them to do that. But, you know, lineup wise, I don't get too worked up about lineups. They actually don't make that big a difference. I'm a big believer in having guys hit where they're comfortable. You know, I worked in the Astros front office for 8 years, and, you know, George Springer, not a traditional leadoff guy. I think most teams would want to hit him third or fourth. George Springer wanted to hit leadoff. It was where he was the most comfortable. And so he hit leadoff. And I think that's how you get the best performance out of guys. So it's really about finding a comfort level and getting these guys, these kind of team-wide slumps. It can affect people, and you got to get them to a place where they know they're better than this, they're comfortable. You get them a couple games where they score 8 runs, and everything should turn around at least a little bit here. I mean, so obviously it's a better team than one that's scoring 3 runs a game.
Kevin, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Great story.
Great stuff, Kevin.
Thanks for having me on.
That is Kevin Goldstein. You know what's fascinating is he has a list of the comps to what's going on with Javi Baez. And the closest guy, the next closest guy is Miguel Oliva.
Oh, I know.
I mean, come on, man. The comps are as scary as anything else.
It's a scary reality check, and even more frightening for Javi Baez, considering what he described as what he may be looking at this offseason as a free agent, a one-year prove-it deal for El Mago? Man, what happened? What happened?
312-644-6767. What happened? That is a good question. Does anyone have a theory? We'll happily hear it. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
You mentioned a bit about evaluating the quarterback differently. I'm wondering if that mindset comes from having to move on from Mitch, someone that you obviously moved up in the draft to get, someone you really had a lot of high hopes for, and then realizing that that didn't work out.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, Deion, you learn from every one of these things, and the draft's not an exact science. We know that. And, you know, I think there's so many variables involved in this. You know, there's so many things that happen when you draft a player. And I think, yeah, again, you do learn from it. And I think, you know, we're the different staff now. Again, I think we're very connected to our coaches on what we're looking for. There's multiple ways to attack all these positions, not just quarterback. And that's what we're working through right now.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Ryan Pace. And that was from April 2nd. being asked about one of the worst draft picks he's ever made, and Mitch Trubisky trading up to get to the number two spot in order to take a guy that now will be making, I mean, next to nothing, frankly, from a quarterback perspective with as a backup with the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, Ryan Pace does a really good job of mentioning quickly there that that was with a different staff, and now we all have a different staff and we have our eyes on the same thing. He's always talking about, oh, the, you know, the consensus that was built among all the people. He's the guy that pulls the trigger. That was his draft pick.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, David, it's really weird to me how little buzz there is about this draft. The draft is 2 weeks from tomorrow. I know that CBS Sports did their latest mock, and they have the Bears taking the USC offensive tackle, Elijah Vera Tucker. And I don't know if that's what this is about, a failure to appreciate the importance of offensive linemen. I don't know if it's about the failure to appreciate the need for a corner when you let one go, which creates the need for a corner. Or does it have to do with the fact that naming Andy Dalton QB1 has lost some people? And the interest level isn't what it would be if you felt the Bears were definitely trading up for a quarterback. Or are people just tired of what they've seen here? But the buzz is not there. The buzz is simply not there for this draft. Will it build? Will they make some move? Hey, it's Russell Wilson. Will that change everything? Or are we looking at one of the more kind of boring player procurement periods that we've seen in a very long time?
Well, since you asked, I don't think it matters. It can't matter. Okay, Bears fans' interest in the draft, it means nothing to the Bears' ability to draft the right player. Those two things are not connected. The interest in the draft has nothing to do with the Bears' effectiveness in drafting the right player, or frankly, the importance of this draft, regardless of the lack of buzz. And I do agree with you. I don't think there has been as much buzz as in certain years. And I'll get why I think so in a second. But regardless of that, this draft is as important as any that Ryan Pace has ever overseen, because it's the next one and it could be his last one. And so I think regardless of the noise, you're focused on getting the right player, addressing the specific need or needs that you have, and how you go about it in terms of whether or not you're going to be bold and aggressive and move up to get a quarterback, which you should not be allowed to do if you're Ryan Pace anymore. You've lost that right. Or if you're going to stay at 20, which is kind of middle of the road, and get the best player available for your depth chart. If it's a tackle, great. If it's a cornerback, better. If it's a wide receiver, okay. But we'll talk about that. Now, Ryan Pace, what we heard from April 2nd, what we have heard this offseason, I have ignored all of it. Nothing we have heard this offseason, with due respect to Matt Nagy saying that he's going to call plays, has mattered. Nothing at all. And if I'm wrong, tell me how I'm wrong. Because nothing that they have said has been of anything of consequence that leads you to believe you know what direction they're headed, that you feel better about what next season will bring, or that QB1 is the guy that's going to cure all the problems that ail everyone at Hallis Hall. Nothing they've said, it matters. So what they have done is a lot louder. So I'm focused on, you know, getting ready for the draft. I'm excited about the draft. I don't know about you. I am.
I misspoke. I shouldn't have said no buzz about the draft. No buzz about the Bears would be a better way of putting it. For whatever reason, and I think we know why, here in Chicago, I'm not hearing the kind of buzz about this team that is normally very apparent at this time of year as you head into a draft. And I don't know if that's QB1 and that text and that reality and how upset people are about it. I don't know if it's running the same thing back again, if it has anything to do with just a general weariness of 8-8. But I'm saying to you, and I want to hear what you think about what the reason for it, but I'm saying to you that I'm getting no Bears buzz, even from my closest fan friends, people that love the team and live and die on everything. it's not that they've checked out. It's they haven't checked in. And that's what surprises me.
Cynicism is at a record high level, I believe. And the Bears have earned it. When you go into the playoffs and you limp in and you back in, and then you get sort of beaten in the way that the Bears did, and then you make decisions at quarterback. And let's face it, Mully, there's a lot of people out there that are deflated by the fact that they were maybe led to believe maybe the hope for Russell Wilson was manufactured and never very real. I think never very real, but people had it. And so maybe that's part of it. Maybe they're like, geez, what are they going to give me? Another offensive tackle and a cornerback who, you know, might be pre-injured. How do you get excited about that? Maybe that's all part of it. But I still think that Bears could get a couple good players
sure,
in this draft.
They should get a great player at 20. But David, I'm just telling you that, and you know yourself, that there isn't the same buzz about the team right now.
Yeah,
and I don't know
right.
if it's and I'm with you about not listening to what they say because it's just a lot of noise. Matt Nagy coming back to play call, that was so obvious that was going to happen. If he's under pressure to keep his job, he's going to go down swinging with what he does best, what he believes he does best. That didn't surprise me. Nothing that has occurred here has really surprised me other than the way they've apparently – rob their fans of interest at this point in the year. Weird.
Do you think they favor that? Do you think they prefer that there's very little buzz surrounding the draft and attention?
I don't think they welcome the scrutiny. I mean, you just heard Ryan Pace has asked about Mitch Trubisky and the doublespeak that goes into, you know, different administration. I mean, it's just they don't want to be asked about anything. They don't want to sit in front of anyone, and that's why they don't say anything when they're actually asked something.
And because you know what draft did have a bunch of buzz, you know when there were a lot of people talking about the pick and what Ryan Pace would do? 2017. How'd that
exactly,
go?
That's exactly right. So maybe it's better if
it's
we
better.
All look away. Yeah.
It's better.
Just look away and cough.
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see. Keep going.
All right. We're going to welcome in Dan and Layla next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.